This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to Roundtable Talks on RNIB Connect Radio, where we bring together blind and partially sighted people from different walks of life to discuss a big topic. As we move into the colder months, this roundtable is exploring self-care and wintering. Wintering is a concept popularised by author Catherine May. She describes how we can confront and accept the winters of nature and life, which are fallow periods marked by loss and difficulty. The darker months can add mobility challenges that impact how much we go outside. Wet and icy streets, lower light and reduced visibility in snow and fog can add many extra barriers to getting around as a blind or partially sighted person. Motivation to get out and see friends, family, or continue the well-being activities that nourish us, like exercise and hobbies, can also feel much harder to do. But what are some of the ways we can work with and embrace the colder seasons and continue to look after our well-being even as the atmosphere changes around us? Well, we're joined today by four different panellists who approach winter and self-care in their own ways. Our first panellist is Mari Thurston. Welcome, Mari. Can you introduce yourself?
Hello, yes, my name is Mari Thurston and I work full-time as a Professor of Applied Counselling and Psychotherapy Research in Sight Loss at Abertay University Dundee, and I'm registered severely sight impaired and I have a guide dog called Meadow, and I absolutely love a spa break and going for a dip in the sea with a wetsuit and boots and gloves, yes.
Thank you, Mari. It sounds brilliant. And the wetsuit and boots and gloves sound like a great measure for our chat today. Our next panellist is Pete Wild. Welcome, Pete. Can you introduce yourself?
My name is Pete Wild, and I am actually a music presenter on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm 68. I'm a grandfather, a retired teacher, and I taught for 42 years in a variety of different roles. I'm a big music fan, as you'll probably gather from this broadcast. I present a classic rock and an acoustic show. I'm also a martial artist. I've practiced for over 50 years, and I was registered. I've been partially sighted for just about 2 years, coming up to 2 years now.
Thank you, Pete. Our next panellist is Dawn Blizzard. Welcome, Dawn. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Dawn, and I'm a yoga teacher. And I'm visually impaired. I have Stargardt's disease. And I love being outdoors. I love doing nature and spending time with my family.
Thank you very much, Dawn. And last but by no means least, we have James Kyle. Welcome, James. Can you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is James Kyle. I am a social action community coordinator with RNIB in Scotland. I have a macular condition, so central vision loss, which makes things like reading and identifying people very, very difficult. Also adds a degree of light sensitivity, which can, you know, make winter months quite difficult. I like to spend my time during the autumn and winter months playing accessible video games, dabbling in making my own video games, and learning how to play the piano.
Thank you so much, James, and thank you everyone for joining us for this discussion. So let's get started with some of the challenges around winter. What are some of the day-to-day things that you find difficult?
Headlights on cars in the darker times really hurt my eyes. So I am the weird woman still in the middle of winter walking around with sunglasses on.
That low sun as well, that's a real... so difficult. Like, it's like, and can you wear your visor in the rain and try and stop the sun? Like, it's really difficult. I know, certainly in the dark, like, I have a hat that's got a light on it, and Meadow has a collar that is light up, which is always brilliant for trying to find her if we're out on a free run.
I can say I'm a fellow sunglasses wearer in all weather and all conditions, but I do keep my they're prescription sunglasses, so I keep my normal glasses with me so that I can pop them on if it's dark, because I don't need it to be any darker than it is at night time. But I find during the winter I'm probably going to be going out less, just on account of the weather, and because of that I'm relying a lot more for entertainment on things like TV and film and audio description features of those, I've recently started actually using those rather than just trying to sort of muddle through without it, and I found it really, really helpful. And you know, I'm watching maybe a bit more TV than I should be because of it.
I think a lot of people, you know, the autumn schedule on TV is, you know, something that they cherish. You know, it's a time to sort of get warm and cozy and, you know, perhaps watch some of those winter shows. But for me, my gripe is not being able to do things that I used to be. And I'm a little bit of a pessimist at times. Now, I'll just say something about that and also something about positivity in just a second. But things seem to go wrong. You know, locks seem to break, and, you know, that central heating doesn't work. And it's those little gripes that get me, that in the winter when you need things to be all secure and all working well, things don't work. And, you know, it's that little gripe. In terms of that, I'm one of those people who tends to think of all the things that can potentially go wrong. And I heard the other day that at Kobe University in Japan, they were discovering that positive thinkers are much healthier and live much longer. And I'm thinking, I shouldn't start thinking, oh, my granddaughter's going to fall over, oh, that step there, I better move this, and what's going to happen there? And I've got 15 things that might go wrong, which makes me a negative person. And I need to get out of that and start having a much more positive frame of mind, because I'm going to live longer if I do, apparently.
Yeah, we can choose the colour of our day. First thing in the morning, you can pick the colour of your day. If you get up and you look outside and it is going to be a dark, gloomy day, you can colour on that colour if you want to, or you can say, oh, you know, how lucky I am, I've just got out of bed with a duvet, you know, I'm blessed to be able to put the kettle on and have a hot drink. So it's the small things that we can change the colour of the day.
Yeah, that's a beautiful description, isn't it? Changing the colour of the day. I think there's that thing, like, there's, you can have catastrophizing thoughts such as like, oh, winter's going to be so terrible. And just that challenging it, like, what colour is your winter going to be like, in terms of what Dawn was saying? And also in terms of what Pete was saying, like that, you know, that really trying to challenge these negative thoughts and to see if you can find a different, a more moderate way. So like, well, there might be some bad days, but actually I'm really looking forward to sitting down and having that audiobook or listening to that or drinking my coffee or doing a bit of yoga or doing some, yeah. So it's finding ways through it and having gratitude for what you've got, I think, is always really helpful.
Yeah, I would definitely look forward to all of the sort of autumn and sort of seasonal things that they would bring in, and all the, in the sort of high street coffee places, yes. Gingerbread muffins and things like that.
And moving over to you, Pete, what's something that nourishes you or helps make you feel good in the colder months?
Well, I'm not too sure if it's just the cold months. I think for me, it's part of my life. It's the wonder and the beauty and the magic of music. It's interesting to hear James talking about learning to play the piano. I think playing an instrument is a wonderful thing if that, you know, that's possible in your life. And that is beneficial health-wise, I understand, in terms of creating new neural pathways in the brain, is all very good. But although I've been trying to play guitar for many years, I'm much better at listening to music than I am playing it. It's just this, to me, there is so much in music that can be enjoyed quietly at home, or even now with all the devices that we have, you can, you know, be moving around. My wife likes to listen to audiobooks and so on, and music with headphones while she's doing what she wants to do, you know, household tasks or preparing stuff for Sunday school and so on. To me, it is the love of music and finding new music and playing music and enjoying it. And I think there's many ways that you can enjoy music.
That, I think that really resonates with me as well. You know, there's something, I know when I settle down to work, I can often like get in front of my computer and feel quite anxious about the tasks ahead. And I have this playlist from Spotify, which is called Calming Puppy Music Playlist. And it really sets the tone, brings my nervous system down and allows me to focus. So I think music has such an impact on your mood. You know, it can really fire me up, or it can calm me down. So
yes.
Yeah, that's a great, great topic. Yeah.
So in yoga, it's classed as a word called nada, And Nada is like deep listening. And the thing, since losing my eyesight, you're using that sense more to really listen to what people are saying, and also, as you said, like recognizing people's voices. So it's Nada's like deep listening, and it's really important for that. And I think we've lost that in a sense, you know, very when we've sighted people, it's everything with the eyes, everything they see, but they don't really deep listen as much.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Somebody very clever, and I can never remember who it was, said that music can affect the head, the heart, or the hips. It's, you know, suitably catchy little expression. I mean, we know that the rhythms of music can make you feel like dancing, but we know also a lyric can affect, you know, you can get across an issue, get across an emotion, or you can just be made to think of something, you know, and be aware of an issue. I mean, you know, protest songs from the days of Bob Dylan and Woody Guthrie onwards, you know, they get across a message. And I think that's particularly important. And I love the idea of deep listening. One of the things that I like doing is actually listening to a piece of music and trying to separate the instruments that I'm hearing and hear the different patterns and the different rhythms and tempos and so on within a piece of music.
I do find that the playing of music is really useful for me, just for focusing my mind on something else. One of the reasons why, or one of the benefits I found from taking up the playing of an instrument, well, I work from home a lot of the time, and I often have telephone conversations with blind and partially sighted people who are perhaps newly diagnosed, and these conversations can, you know, place quite a, you know, you take some of that trauma away with you. And a lot of these conversations, being able to sort of step aside and take 5 minutes for myself, just practicing something on the piano, just to focus my mind entirely on something else, I find both helps me to get through the day without feeling quite so done in by the trauma of the calls that I sometimes encounter. But it's also, you know, just a great hobby to have, and part of the reason why I took it up was just to impress my family. So yeah, it's been good. Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting, James. Like in counselling, we call that, like, you have something that grounds you. So when you've listened to something that's quite emotionally intense, you're going and getting absorbed by the sound of, you know, the sound waves of the piano and the focus and everything. It's like a grounding activity.
There's a word which we use as well, is mantra, when you repeat something within your mind. So it could be a song lyric that uplifts you, it could be positive words, and repeating words when you get up in the morning. So today I'm going to be positive, you know, today's I'm going to do the best that I can, and you repeat it. And through doing that, you can change the thoughts that come in with your mind as well. So that sort of helps me.
Yeah, I get that. I have my own mantra that I do every morning, and it's been really helpful. And it is one from Louise Hay, who was a very big back in the 70s in her ratings. But it begins with, "All is well. Everything is working out for my highest good. Out of this experience, only good will come, and I'm safe." And I just say that over and over again. And again, it's a grounding mantra. Yeah, it's really good.
It's really just trying to find the positive in everything in a bad situation, and you can find your own mantra. But they are very much like song lyrics, you know, "Free me from anger, jealousy and fear, fill my heart with joy and compassion." They are like song lyrics, and you can just, through that repetition, it gets into your thought pattern.
Everyone has mentioned finding grounding exercises or finding ways to try and think more positively. But have there been periods where you've had to accept that things are difficult and embrace rest, or really try and change your outlook?
Well, back in March, I had major surgery. It was like major abdominal surgery. And in that period of recovery, it was a really difficult to feel, to be so dependent. I couldn't get into my bed without assistance, couldn't make a cup of tea. It was like I had to really, because I'm a very independent person, but I had to really take the care of others. And in that time, there was a period of me kind of really reassessing, you know, what were important things in life, and just having to slow down, you know, the pace of that I usually go to. But actually it ended up being quite a time of reflection and like recovery, and that gratitude I was left with was like I was grateful for really small things, and I think that kind of helped get me back into kind of the real world. You know, developing gratitude for the smallest of things, like, you know, I'm really grateful I can hold this kettle today. You know, it was like my world had shrunk so much. So, yeah, I could see that out of that, it was a really dark time, but there was learning and growth for me in it. Yeah.
I think if you look to nature, like you said earlier, and you look to nature and you see how the leaves are falling from the trees, it's a letting go process. It's a circle. So there's a beginning and a middle and an end, and everything goes through that. And when the trees let go of thoughts or old things, then they regrow again. So I think this time of the year, you can use that as a reflection of like letting go of what's no longer serving you and allowing new things to come in to your life as well. So it can be a kind of a cleansing process this time of the year, you know, and a reflecting process of like, what do I need to let go of through this cycle? And then what can I bring in?
I think in my small way, following on from COVID, which is possibly one of the reasons I'm partially sighted, it was accepting the new world that I found myself in. I woke up just before Christmas with, you know, the sight issues I have now. And I can't obviously drive. And, you know, having driven for all my adult life, that taken away causes you to sort of reassess what you have got. And you start thinking, well, where can I walk to? And can I get to that place? Can I still do that particular hobby? You know, can I still attend that meeting? You know, what can I do? And there's a sort of resigned acceptance, which a sort of pragmatism in a way, that you think, well, okay, this is what I've got. And there's a simplicity to it as well, I think. You think, well, okay, I can't do anything about it, can't change it. You know, I in that well-known expression, I can't change the world, but I can change myself. And having come into that acceptance is about me accepting the situation I'm in now, as we all have. And there is a simplicity to it. It's easy. Not always easy, but it is what it is what young people say today, isn't it?
When I was first diagnosed, and this is going back 25 years ago, I had the experience of having to maybe drop out of university, which did take some time just for myself to understand my sight loss and, you know, what I could then go and do with my life. And following that period, I found meeting with people who understood my disability. I went into study art and I ended up getting myself a undergraduate degree in digital art, but the one of the main things that helped me do that was having lecturers and professors that understood that while I may not be able to see things as accurately as my sighted colleagues on the course, it would give me a unique perspective, and the reframing of that really helped me sort of move through that sort of difficult situation.
I can resonate with that. Like there was a sense of, oh, this is a really difficult end of one chapter. But actually through that period of kind of readjustment, there's a kind of new normal that comes that like I would never have believed that I would, when I was told I was losing my sight as a teacher, that I would end up then as in like 20 years later as a professor in like in counselling. So it's almost like it's like surrendering to the process of when this things change, like that there's also opportunity for regrowth and regeneration, and as spring comes around, so does change.
Exactly. I only found out sort of just after lockdown that I had Stargardt's disease. So it's only sort of 5 years. So mine's been really quick of losing my driving license. You know, can I continue to teach yoga and philosophy that I love? And there's been some real obstacles, but I've really started to actually use the tools that I've been teaching, you know, but I've had to ask for help and accept that I'm not being a burden to other people. I was very independent and would jump on a plane and go to Costa Rica and be out there for a month on my own. And now I'm scared of going around the corner in the darker evenings on my own. I have to have somebody to come with me because I still want to go. So there's these small changes to some people, but really big impacts in your life.
Yeah, I think being dependent is something that people most fear. We're fine with being independent, but having to be dependent feels very scary. Yes. I think something about going into the darker days, like that feels like really significant with the onset of winter and how scary that can be, and particularly those who have poor sight. It brings an extra level of challenge.
I do a lot of travelling for work. And it does make it a little bit more difficult when it's so dark in the mornings and then dark in the evenings. I'm fortunate in that I can schedule a lot of the work that I do outside around, daylight hours to make my travelling easier. But I rely quite a lot on, passenger assistance if I'm using the trains or, just technology to help guide me from A to B. I don't know where I'd be without my sort of walking instructions through my headphones when I'm trying to reach anywhere. Even familiar places can be difficult if the lighting conditions are changed from what you're used to.
So much of what you're all saying, I'm in full agreement. And I was just thinking of the rhythms that we were talking about, the natural rhythms of, spring, summer, autumn, winter, depending on regional variations and so on. But there is that sense, the circadian rhythms in terms of the day, in terms of waking up and, the darkening evenings and so on, and how, to some extent, we have to be more in tune with those rhythms. And just accept that's the natural way of things and deal with it. And if I may just drop in another point, I was thinking of something my grandfather said, and this is something that I've had, if you pardon my pun, I've had my eyes open since being part of the RNIB, that the incredible abilities that people I can now see who have greater sight issues than myself. And my grandfather said, he used to have an expression, he said, I cried because I had no shoes until I met the man who had no feet, which is something that grandfathers say. But, there are people far worse off than me who are doing far more wonderful things. And I was watching a wonderful thing about a lady traveling right across London because she was a rower. And she went to this rowing centre and she traveled right across London, and I just thought, and I'm moaning about trying to get into town. It's accepting, your place, your role, and getting on with it, isn't it? But I do appreciate it can be very, very difficult for people.
That's interesting, Pete, that you said what your grandfather's saying, because in a piece of research I did, one of the earlier pieces of research I did, was that people described how they came to terms with their sight condition. It was about comparison with people worse off. I'm still alive,
they're fine.
A way of framing it so that it's not as it could be worse, that type of.
Yes. Indeed, I can still see. I don't walk into things. I've lost an aspect of my sight, but I'm luckier than some other people, and I shouldn't, bemoan my fate. It's just getting on with it, because, as you say, I am relatively lucky in many ways.
I think it's about finding your community and being able to express what you're feeling without feeling ashamed of it as well. So communication is really, really good. So I did the Yorkshire Three Peaks for the Macular Society, and I started to get overwhelmed because people were running past me. I had this overwhelmed sensation of feeling like I was holding everybody back. And I started crying. And one of my students looks up at me, and he was like shouting up the mountain, and he's like, "What's the matter with her?" And his wife shouting back like, "She's having a moment." And he said, "Dawn, just get on with it." And I was like, "Okay." And I just started clambering up this mountain. But that's the thing. Sometimes you do have to have somebody that really knows you of saying, you know, like, "You can overcome this. You're going to be okay."
Yeah. And we find peer support is so useful for our community members. And it's something I've had experience of as a RNIB service user myself as well. Prior to working with RNIB, I'd been unemployed since my diagnosis of vision impairment. For about 15 years I was unemployed for. I thought because of my sight loss that it would be unlikely that I'd be able to get into employment, even after going through the process of getting my undergraduate degree and then a master's degree up at Abertay University. But still didn't have that confidence. And it was only when I met other people with sight loss, it was actually an RNIB pre-employment course led by someone who had no sight at all. And that totally reframed my idea of what I could achieve for myself, because this gentleman was leading it, suit and tie, you know, looked every bit the model employee, but no sight at all and doing a great job. And that made me completely rethink things.
And how do you balance the desire to be independent, the desire to push through difficult things to achieve your goals, and also try to make time and space for the rest or the kind of wobbles and the tantrums? What does that balance look like for you?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. What does it feel like when being blind is, or like having trouble seeing, really is tough? You look at people who don't seem to be bothered by it, and sometimes can feel like such a failure for, like, it's having a bad day. I think what I'm thinking of going into winter is about having like intentionality. And what I mean by that is like realizing this could be quite tough for me in some ways, because it's going to be dark in the morning, it's going to be dark in the evening, and I'm going to find it challenging. So what are the resources I can gather around me? Like, what do I know that I need that will nourish me? So whether it's like the music that Pete was saying, or having peer support like James was saying, or Dawn, like going to yoga, getting into the body, and like or doing things that you know will uplift you. Like, so for me it's going to a spa. It's like gathering your resources, because you know there's going to be difficult times ahead. I think that intentionality is important.
Yes, good point. I was just thinking that it's having some reason to be getting up in the morning. You know, if you have a job, then you get up because that gives you drive, it gives you a reason to be doing something, it gives you targets. Whatever it is that drives you on a daily basis, whether it's family, you know, I sort of got childcare with my granddaughter, he lives near, another one who lives in Brighton. And so you have to get up, you have to be a grandfather. Or if you've got, you know, a job involved with people, you know, you have to be there for other people. And it's having something to drive you day to day through what's happening, and you know, a reason to be getting up, really. I think that's important.
Yeah, one of the things I find, I follow a lot of blind and partially sighted people within the accessible video games industry, and many of them are what you might describe as like a super blind person, and they're doing very extraordinary things, traveling around the world, running businesses, and being a major part of that industry. But that's not necessarily for everyone. It's not something that everybody could achieve. And meeting people, ordinary people with similar conditions to yourself, I find is often a great way to just create realistic expectations for what's achievable, or for what you can expect. Because many of the people that you would meet in the sight loss community are living independently. They're leading great lives, they're very happy, but they're maybe, you know, they're not, you know, doing the whole thing where they're massively overachieving and sort of setting that as though that's the expectation.
We don't know what's going on behind the camera or the video or the Instagram. We don't know their life. So visually impaired or anybody shouldn't be keep comparing themselves to others. We need to go inward to actually really get to know ourselves. What is the purpose of your life? What do you want to achieve? Rather than looking outward, we need to look inward. I kind of like smile to myself now, you know, what I couldn't do at first, but it's like I'm being made to look inwards because I can't look outwards.
Good point.
So, you know, everybody, I mean, it's, you know, social media, you know, is such a big thing. It shouldn't be called social because sometimes it's not.
And we know that from the research that, you know, anxiety is a very prevalent amongst people with who are blind and partially sighted. And a lot of that is actually really understandable stuff, like there's some anxiety about going out, you know, if you don't know your way and things like that. And I think that sense of like getting your head in the right place, like that, you know, looking inwards in some way, you know, finding your zen. And if that's difficult, then there's always counselling, you know, consider getting support from RNIB counselling service. To try and overcome the anxiety as you go into winter, to find your inner resources and your, you know, practical resources, yeah, so that you're prepared.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio for this wintering roundtable.